Welcome to This Just In, the show bringing you the latest advancements in healthcare, strategy, innovation, and public policy. And now, for the fastest voice in healthcare, here's your host, Justin Barnes.
The show will go on. Welcome to the special edition of This Just In Radio. I'm your host, Justin Barnes. Today we're broadcasting live from the Atlanta studios. As most of you know, we're supposed to be in sunny Orlando for the HIMSS 20 conference. But with that being canceled due to the coronavirus precautions, I could not be happier that we're still able to pull this show off. Many thanks to all of my guests that stuck with me and all of you to make this show happen today. Before we get too far, though, let me introduce my air and my radio and on-air personality and producer, Stone Payton from Business Radio X. Welcome, my friend.
Thank you, sir.
It's great to have you here. Also in studio today is a great friend of the show and producer, Roberta Mullen, broadcasting us across the Healthcare Now radio network as well. Welcome, Roberta.
Thanks, Justin, for inviting me. I love being in studio with you.
Yeah, you're always a great personality here to have with us. So now I'd love to introduce my very first guest, Dr. Bob Monteverdi, Global Director of Healthcare Solutions for Lenovo Health. Welcome back to the show, Bob.
Hey, Justin, how are you?
Fantastic. Thank you for taking time out of your busy life to join our show today.
Sorry it's not face-to-face in Orlando, but circumstances have changed that, right?
I know. But let's take a moment to glean some of your thought leadership. Obviously, you're always a great guest that we have each year, but what healthcare or health IT trends are you seeing in the industry and that you're going to navigate in this coming year and beyond?
Yeah, to me, it's really a lot of the usual suspects with a couple of new things popping in, but you know, obviously with the advent of the interoperability rules, which I'm sure we'll be talking about quite a bit on this show with the ONC, there's that just kind of begs this balancing act of data access, convenience, and security. That has been something that healthcare has been juggling for since the beginning of data being captured electronically. And I don't see it going away anytime soon. You know, very interesting ruling this week. There'll be people on both sides of that argument. But overall, I'm a fan. I think patients owning their data and being able to gain access to it while still maintaining security and having the APIs in place to enable that are important. You know, AI augmented is really another a big play. Artificial intelligence, augmented reality. There's a couple of big ones there that we get involved in here at Lenovo. But that whole idea of using analytics and taking it beyond to be able to help. You see a lot of AI with assistive diagnosis occurring. There's a lot more places we can go. And augmented reality, of course, is something that will become an increasingly more used tool in healthcare as an assistive tool, I think, during the day-to-day life of physicians. All of those are, you know, they've been around for quite some time. The one that I kind of see is the newer kid on the block, and it's virtual health. Mm-hmm. It goes by many different names, virtual health, virtual care. But it's moving quite a bit beyond telehealth, and that's the one that's really been intriguing me over the last, you know, couple of years. When you start looking at going from just the basic e-visits and moving into remote patient monitoring and patient adherence and behavior modifications, that's a big, big difference. And where I see that really focused on is chronic care. Chronic care contributes to the biggest portion of our cost in this nation, arguably, depending on which stat you want to use, somewhere in a 75% plus range of the $3+ trillion that we spend is focused on chronic care. Not really a big surprise considering aging populations increasing, physician shortages, actually another factor in that as well. Yeah. It's something that needs to be addressed by this nation, and it's never going to replace care, but it's a good augmentation of it. So I see that, you know, many drivers along the ones we just mentioned. When I start looking at the value that could be achieved from that, it really is very patient-centric. I see improvement in patient adherence, definitely more patient engagement where you're able to do more frequent monitoring of the data on a recurring basis and interact remotely through assistive AI devices. Patient satisfaction increases. The potential to expand geographic patient access, of course, increases when it's more remote. And then, of course, data outcomes improving, which is really the key game. Also, you know, there's some financial advantages too, where you look at anything that can help reduce patient admissions or readmissions, specifically within a 30, 60, 90 day time frame back into the hospital, avoids penalties and makes patients a whole lot happier. And then lastly, of course, you're aware with all the new codes that keep getting more and more robust each quarter and each year, CMS with increasing reimbursement of that remote patient monitoring and other private insurances following suit. So I'll stop to breathe, but those are the big ones. And again, I think virtual play is really becoming very, very intriguing.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think the only, you know, if you want to look at a silver lining to what's happening right now across our country and obviously globally, is that a lot of these precautions right now and how we're changing healthcare and looking at healthcare regarding coronavirus and COVID-19 is just the push and focus on what telehealth, what remote patient monitoring, remote care can do and what it needs to do today. We've known this, you know, you're a leader here. We've been doing this for 10, 15, 20 years. We've known the opportunity here, but now this is bringing it to the forefront. So now it's certainly part of our conversation on a daily basis. States like North Carolina, actually, where you reside, is moving forward right now, actually started yesterday, where you can actually be paid same as an office visit, a virtual care visit, you know, a telehealth visit. So that's those kind of changes we've been asking for and needing for a while. They're basic common sense, and now you're starting to see them take hold. So I couldn't agree more with what you just, you know, went through and the strategy that you defined. So, you know, kind of as a closing next step, just to give my next, we got about 30 seconds here to go. But where do you think people should be looking at in the next 2 years when you say virtual care? Like, give us just a kind of a heads up of where you think we should look at it on the horizon.
Yeah, I think it's some of the things I just kind of, you know, said at the end of that there. It's thinking well beyond the whole idea of just these visits. And think of it really focused around behavior modification. It's really about getting patients who aren't always necessarily the most adherent to do what you want them to do, to be able to monitor them more frequently, to know that the monitoring effect that their physicians and providers are looking in on them and trying to help, automated alerting, that whole mix can help make patients want to do better. There's the gamification aspect to that, but additionally, it's the stakes are high. It's their health, so you want to know that someone's checking in on you, that someone's there for you, and all of those factors. In addition to building those tiny little habits of making sure they're eating the right foods, getting the sleep, taking the meds when they're supposed to, they're all really, really important. I see more and more of that growing, and potentially even expanding into, you know, more linking together with smart home. Less of the FDA-centric, approved devices, which are core to the healthcare aspect, but seeing that expand out to smart home, and then of course family members being able to tap in as well and help with that care. I think this is a bit of a juggernaut that's not going to slow down.
Excellent. I love it, and you're spot on, Bob. Thank you very much. I appreciate you joining our broadcast today, and obviously you're always a great, great partner of the show, and we truly appreciate that. You have a great rest of your day, and obviously stay tuned because we got some great guests coming up as well, Bob. Is Anish Chopra on the line?
The one and only.
Hey, Justin, it's Anish. It's so nice to hear your voice.
How are you, Anish?
Well, I couldn't be. Well, we're of two minds, right? We're ecstatic about the state of policy, but really despondent about COVID-19. And so how can I be both exuberant and enthusiastic, but somber at the same time? It's a little bit hard.
Excellent. But you are wearing your pink socks, correct?
Virtual pink socks.
I love it. I know we can't, it's hard to be, we've got so much happening in our lives right now, but I love your energy, your enthusiasm. And I know with bright people like you and brilliant people like you, we will solve these issues and we'll solve them more quickly. So thank you for being here today.
I'm excited to join you this morning and excited about, you know, hopefully keeping the momentum moving on the heels of yesterday. So happy to dive in.
You got it. So what healthcare or health IT trends are you seeing in the industry, my friend?
Well, look, I see the lens as I see it, which is the public-private interface. And there are three things that I'm paying attention to. Number one, the regulatory news from yesterday, there has been this consistent drumbeat for the last decade that the information we need to do a job to make healthcare better is a little bit of a collective action problem. No one actor is evil and getting in the way, but collectively we just haven't made as much progress. With a new floor, a regulatory floor, I'm very confident that this will lead to a trend of less discussion about the need for interoperability and much more of a focus on uses. So that's point number one. The trend here is liquidity is coming slash interop talking points are going to fall. That's hope, yep. Number one. The second public-private interface that I'm focused on is payment reform. All of this is moot if we don't have an economic model that drives better value in the healthcare delivery system.
So true.
Paying a great deal of attention on two models specifically. CMS launched Primary Care First to rip the Band-Aid off primary care capitation and has opened the window for any other health plan to join, whether that's a commercial plan, another Medicare Advantage plan, a Medicaid managed care plan, or a healthcare.gov plan. Any kind of plan can participate in the model so that a greater share of a physician's panel could be organized under the same economic arrangement. That should make it a lot easier for doctors to participate in this new model when you don't have to practice one kind of medicine in the morning and then a second kind of medicine in the afternoon, depending on the particular contract with which that patient is, the insurance contract tied to the patient. So point number two is how many plans will join CMS in ripping the Band-Aid on primary care capitation? Related to that is the new direct contracting model where CMS basically said, we've had these two worlds, unmanaged fee-for-service that's evolved into ACOs, but there's also been this sort of dive into Medicare Advantage if you want to go full risk. Now there's a happy alternative, which is for physicians that want to stay in the traditional Medicare program but want the economic arrangement to align the incentives for capitation akin to what they might do in a global risk contract in MA. That's the second area in this pay-to-value trend that I'm exploring. How many health plans join Medicare, and how deep does the Medicare program on capitation run across the delivery system? So we talked about interoperability as trend one. We've talked about payment reform as trend two. Near and dear to my heart in trend three is the broader transparency movement. Mm-hmm. How do we make aggregate data sets available for us to understand what works and what doesn't in the healthcare delivery system? And that is where, first of all, it's my day job at Care Journey, but it's also CMS leading the way. Adding Medicaid encounters to the Medicare open data sets means that 120 million Americans' claims history is available for research to study what is or is not working, which physicians, networks, and facilities are delivering better care relative to their peers.
I love it.
So the source of all that public-private collaboration. Yep.
Yeah. So just on that last part there, what can we do? That's an area where transparency is massive, significant in my world as well. Where can we push on that? Or how do we become more transparent? And what levers do we pull there, in your opinion?
So the government's starting with what it can do, mm-hmm. which is that which is under its control to release. The very obvious next step is how do we create a comparable movement amongst the private plans? Mm-hmm. I'm on the board of the Healthcare Cost Institute. We've been a voluntary collaboration amongst a few key plan partners. Can we scale that model where health plans create effectively a virtual research enclave so that we can look across all population types, not just government-sponsored, for understanding what works? That's on the claims and administrative data side. You and I, Justin, have talked in the past that the holy grail is to get to quality data, which involves the EHR information. And so how do we create the same culture of openness and sharing as it relates to quality data? And will that come because the government will mandate some of that? Will it become part of the norm because we voluntarily created the conditions for these sort of clinical registries to pop up? That's an open question, but one that we will be spending the next X number of months and years grappling with, Justin.
No, I completely agree. I think my closing question is to stay on this a little bit. Roberta just shared it with me. What plan, do plans have incentives to do that yet? Or what do you think there, the other plans?
That's a great question. I think no individual plan feels like their willingness to go open is going to give them an immediate advantage. We almost need to have multiple plans diving off the deep end at the same time to really feel like it. We all know that it's better to have transparency, but we're anxious about going first.
Right.
So I fear the industry is waiting on government action. Mm-hmm. If you remember the bipartisan Lamar Alexander, Patty Murray bill, Lowering Healthcare Costs Act, I believe they called it last year,
yes,
included a national all-payer claims database that would have been a vehicle for that public-private model to take hold with a bedrock of government action. Short of that, I think there may be a few opportunities for us to do that. States are doing it with APCDs, and the more we both collect the data and open it up for a myriad number of uses, the better we're going to be.
Love it. So in our final minute or so, what do you love most about the interoperability rule yesterday? Since that is so timely, what do you think is the best component of that bill, that rule? I mean,
well, look, culturally and technically, making sure that everyone has to point the data to consumers just completely reduces the concerns about, well, I can't share because of HIPAA, what's data minimization, all the contractual, call them, in the U.S. government, we used to have a term for this, which is the non-technical trade barriers. So you'd have global trade, and then you have all these random barriers that get in the way that are not tied to the trade agreement. We have, in the B2B world of healthcare data sharing, a lot of non-tariff trade barriers. On the consumer side, it's clear. So as long as everyone knows the rules of the road, connect to the consumer, then we can empower individuals to trust the networks that they believe will help them make smarter decisions. That has to be the most important takeaway from yesterday. And my hope is that once we get beyond this, we will move those non-tariff trade barriers through policy and other means in order to get to the better place. So that's what I take on the conversation.
Yep. Awesome. Anish, I truly appreciate your time, my friend. I know you have a busy schedule. You have a lot going on. You're always a phenomenal guest and supporter of the show. So thank you, my friend. I believe we have Dr. Karen DeSalvo, Chief Health Officer from Google. Welcome back to the show, Karen.
Hey, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
You got it. Thank you. Thank you. Hopefully those are some familiar voices you just heard as well.
Yes.
Phenomenal. Oh. So first of all, congratulations on your new post. We would look forward to, I'd love to take 30 seconds. John just described his new post as president of Mayo Clinic Platform, but would you like to take 30 seconds to kind of let my audience hear about, you know, what you plan to achieve or, you know, as a new chief health officer for Google?
Yeah, you know, well, Google has entered into an endeavor to see if we can leverage the tools and capabilities of our company in areas like artificial intelligence and computer vision, but also organizing complex information and making it accessible and useful, to applying it to the health sphere. And our mission in the health work is to give more life to everyone every day. So it's broad. It's more than just what we can do in the healthcare environment, but really thinking also about upstream and global opportunities to really focus on quality of life and putting consumers much more in charge, not only of their own information, but of kind of the actions that they can take. And give you an example of something that the team's worked on, which is in the area of applying computer vision and machine learning to reading mammography so that we can not only do a better job of identifying cancer where there might be cancer in mammography, but reducing false positives as well. Yes. And in places like the UK, where they need secondary readers for every mammography, shorten the timeline to when a woman's going to get the results of her mammogram test. So it's a win on the accuracy of the test based upon the results that we published back in January, but also a win for the consumer or the patient who gets their test results earlier. So that's an example of how we're trying to improve the efficiency and effectiveness of the current system. But we're also doing a lot in our platforms around search and YouTube to improve authoritative content that people get. And it's an exciting place. Lots of people come into us every day with health questions, and we look forward to partnering with others to see what we can do to improve health.
I love it. Congratulations. Phenomenal. So, Roberta, you want to ask a question?
Yes, I do. Karen, this is Roberta from Healthcare Now Radio. I'm wondering, you've been in the government, you've been in provider, you're a doctor.
Public health,
all that stuff. Tell us what the culture change is going to big corporation.
You know, first of all, I came to Google because this is a place that puts community first. It's all about the user here. And, you know, you never know till you step into a company how much what you believe or are told is real, but it's real. And, you know, when I left public service at the federal level. And before that, I was the health commissioner in New Orleans. One of the things I loved about those jobs was that you're really able to put the community first. So the culturally, it's been really great. I think what else has been amazing is the level of talent in the company that wants to put our tool to good, and the freedom we've been given to really think about how to do this in a way that is really driven by a partnership. And so it's not so much about replacing or disrupting negatively, but sort of figuring out how to improve the system.
Excellent.
So you're liking it.
It's great.
I love it. I really do. And maybe I'm still in my honeymoon phase, but it's really been, and it's a tremendous platform. And the global nature of it is also what's really exciting. I mean, you think about the opportunity we have from a public health lens to provide better information through our surfaces like search and YouTube. We have, for example, been working for a while with the CDC so that when people search on diabetes, they can go to a CDC developed screener that gives them their sense of their own risk and then pushes them to a CDC list of accredited diabetes prevention programs. That's an example of how we can do sort of the search to action work that puts the consumer more in the driver's seat. There's an awful lot more we'd like to do to help them have better insights into their own health information, et cetera. And so I think it's really, we're being as responsive as we can to what consumers are interested in. And that, by the way, is one of the things I've been starting to do since I was a chief health officer here, is some listening sessions to hear directly from our users, consumers, doctors, others, about what are the ways that we could be more helpful in their daily lives.
It's fantastic. So, Karen, what healthcare, health IT trends are you seeing in the industry from your perspective, from Google, from you personally? I know you just covered a bunch as we opened, but what else would you like to share there?
Well, you know, one of the reasons I came here is because I've always believed that the consumer should be at the center, and increasingly believe they should be a lot more in control. And I don't think that's true just in a U.S. context, but I think globally. And the policy work that we did as when I was national coordinator, we wrote a new strategic plan that put the person at the center, wrapping the data around them. And as John was saying earlier, the EHR is but one of many data sources that tell us about someone's health and quality of life. So starting to shift that paradigm and that power so that the consumer really is more at the center of that. This whole movement towards figuring out how to assemble data that tells a broader story about somebody's health and quality of life, including like social drivers of health or behavioral drivers of health, and doing that in a way that their health information is accessible and useful to them and those they trust, is the trend that everyone's trying to figure out how to meet that expectation from consumers and do it in a way that is really secure and private, but useful to the consumer over time. And I just want to call out, because I know Don's coming up next, how delighted I am to see this next step of the rulemaking on the part of HHS, which builds on work that we did when I was the national coordinator around the 2015 edition and working with Congress on the 21st Century Cures. And I think the fact that the HHS, that FEMA and Don have really pushed forward this next iteration should be a clear signal to the industry and to consumers that health IT is not partisan, but it's really about doing the right thing for their health. And so that the industry always ought to have some clarity that the policy is moving in more of a consumer-centric direction. We need to build tools and businesses that are B2C, very consumer-centric, and be thinking about building an industry that allows for cost and quality, transparency, and people to be able to take access. Look, I have worked in communities that are with seniors or communities of color or communities that are uninsured. So I fully, completely understand, that was my patient base for 20 years, that what we have to build has to be culturally and competent and from a health literacy standpoint. But we really do need to build a future in which the power is not all in the hands of the health system or in the companies that hold the health records, but rather that the power is shifted to those who are really putting the consumer first.
That's fantastic. So, I mean, I'll even give you the last, 30 seconds or so, a minute on. I mean, you just obviously gave some praise. You actually helped start a lot of this back in 2015. So I certainly want to publicly thank you for your hard work and dedication through the years. But what would you want to say regarding the interoperability rules that were launched yesterday?
You know, in addition to everything that ONC did, I think what CMS has signaled in two important areas, one around the conditions of participation, expectations around interoperability, that is a clear shift away from meaningful use as the driver of interoperability, but just to saying it's the 21st century and health systems need to be interoperable. I think there's another clear shift of expecting the health plans to aggregate longitudinal health records, which is a signal that trusted third parties could be a health plan. You know, tech companies have already been in this space, but there will be ways that people want to have their health data aggregated so it's one person, one record across their lifespan, and that the companies that do this by giving people digital dignity are going to be the companies that really help that really I think are successful. So it's really thinking about putting the consumer in the driver's seat and doing it in a way that gives them visibility into their data so they can put it where they can share it with those that they want to when they want to. And it has to be people that they'll trust. And by the way, I want to give Grace Cordovano credit for that digital dignity term. I borrowed that from her in one of the listening sessions that I had. And it's just such an important concept that coming out of these rules is now a 21st century model. Now we've got to figure out how to make sure that we're doing everything we can around privacy, security, and digital dignity for the consumers to make this work in real time.
I love it. I actually wrote that down, digital dignity. I've heard a few quote-unquote hashtag today, wearable wisdom, digital dignity. I love it. So who again coined that term, digital dignity, Karen?
Grace Cordovano, Cordovano.
Fantastic. Well, Dr. DeSalvo, I truly appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule to join us. I know you have a lot going on. I'm sorry we did not get to see each other in person at HIMSS, but thank you again for showing up today and being a part of our show. And thank you again to all of you listeners. Without you, we wouldn't have a show. So thank you for joining us today. And as always, you can tune into This Just In Radio weekdays at 2:30 p.m. Eastern, 11:30 a.m. Pacific. You can go to thisjustinradio.com or healthcarenowradio.com/thisjustin. And you can hear our show broadcast again daily. As always, you can track me on Twitter at HIT Advisor and use the hashtag ThisJustInRadio so we can respond to your comments from the show. If you miss any of this broadcast or want to hear more, my shows are always posted on Apple iTunes, SoundCloud, iHeartRadio, Spreaker, Google Play, and TuneIn. Thanks, everyone. Have a terrific rest of your day.